This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
It's a lot of buzz going on right now around Moscow, Idaho, about the house, the King Road residence, where the lives of four innocent college students were stolen from them. Late last year, the alleged murderer, Brian Koberger, the house still standing, and it's now completely boarded up. There's fencing around it. It's really a spooky sight because not all that long ago, this was a site of happy college days and years and people in a very exciting time in life. And then to see the exact opposite of it now, it's spooky. But there's also, of course, the community there that has to drive by this place, that has to see it, that also has to deal with the gawkers and the onlookers who want to come just to take a look at the property itself. And it's something for a community that has been very peaceful most of its existence, still really is, other than that horrible scar that was put on it late last year. The talk is of tearing the home down. The owner, the landlord of it, had gifted it to the school with the intent that the school would then take it down. And that is where it's at right now. They're talking about going through again and getting any effects out of it that may be wanted by the families. And then once that is completed, taking it down and just removing it. The question being, should they take this thing down now or should they wait? Wait till this trial takes place. Wait till we see, would this be helpful? Would this not be helpful in the trial in convicting Brian Koberger? Psychologist John Delatorre is joining us to talk about that. What are your thoughts on this property on King Road staying up for now and then maybe getting torn down after the trial? Or is it doing more damage right now than good by it just existing?
I think my thoughts are very complicated about it. You know, the first thing is that travel to an outside place. So what I mean is juries going to a location to see, you know, wherever something happened is actually quite rare. You know, we've seen it in some relatively recent cases, but it doesn't happen all that often. It's usually sort of just kind of left in the minds of the juries because it can have a significant impact, you know, perhaps even an appealable impact. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to, I think it's more important what the community decides, less so the school, even though the school is a major component of the mm-hmm. community. I think the community needs to decide whether or not the house needs to stand as some kind of memorial or if it needs to be raised and maybe something put in its place as a memorial. I think the community needs to be more involved in deciding what happens with that house more than any school or any, you know, potential evidentiary value, because the house in and of itself is not necessarily of evidentiary value. And if the police did a good job investigating, everything that is of evidentiary value should have been removed and preserved for the case.
Sure. So I know recently in the Murdaugh trial, we saw them go and visit Moselle and they got to see firsthand where things took place. You had said just earlier that sometimes it may even have an appealable value to it. I'm assuming you meant allowing for someone to make an appeal later on. How have you seen that take place where they were brought in with the intent that this will be good for the prosecution, but then ended up backfiring?
Well, I think that the argument could be made that evidence obtained should be, you know, directly presented as evidence in court, and a house or a structure like that isn't necessarily presented as evidence. Mm-hmm. And so going to a location could be viewed as overly prejudicial, because imagine if someone has an underlying feeling about how someone lives, you know, going to a location like that, or even just, you know, let's say a rundown apartment complex and, you know, in some area like that can elicit implicit biases about someone that can influence the person's decision when it comes to a verdict. So I think the argument would be made that while it could be important, it could absolutely elicit some implicit biases that were not accounted for during voir dire and unduly influenced a person's decision when they were making their verdict. Because is it the actual location that the person is responding to, or is it some belief system about who the person is and how they lived? That's not used in, right? Character evidence is not used in a criminal investigation. So something like that, I think, is too ripe for appeal that it's used very sparingly. And I doubt it would even be used in Koberger, because I don't think the house itself, while Murdoch, we needed to know sort of how close he was, because there was concern about, you know, his voice on videos and stuff like that, and the time frame in which he had claimed things had happened, that he had said he had been doing things. So I think it was important that the jury saw just how far away the house was, how far away the mother's house was, you know, how everything was kind of close together in the kennels. I think it was important in that scenario, but I don't know that it is in a potential coworker trial.
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand where you're coming from there. The principle of tearing the house down. Obviously, it's probably not a bad idea for the community not to have to see that thing every day. But I think even more important, something we don't think about, is the gawking. The people that are literally traveling to Moscow, Idaho, to go drive by the building. That's got to have an impact on the community as well. Is this something where there's this morbid, almost tourism that goes on? How does a community handle something like that? I mean, it's obviously a thousand different ways to deal with it, but what's a healthy way to deal with the morbid curiosity of people coming to your town just to see where these kids were killed?
A healthy way? I think the only real healthy way is the way that the person has decided to manage it. And I say that, you know, with some caution. What I mean is, when it comes to this kind of morbid tourism, there you can either lean into it and allow it to be an aspect of your community and profit from some of those things, as gruesome as that sounds. But understanding that just because you take down the location doesn't mean that people are going to forget that the location exists.
Yeah.
And so I think whatever the community decides would ultimately be the best way to handle this. Keeping it up absolutely has sort of pros and cons. Taking it down has pros and cons. I can imagine that there are people who believe that monuments must stand to the individuals lost in however way that they were lost. And so having the house there is a reminder, you know, to be vigilant about something. You know, like there's plenty of reasons that someone would say that it needs to remain, but I think really the community needs to come together if they want to have, you know, a town hall meeting and decide, you know, amongst themselves what they want to do. I think that's the more important way of handling what to do next with the house.
Should it be the community's choice, or what about the victims themselves and their families?
Everybody needs to be involved, from the school to the city council to major leader representatives from all the different aspects of the community, victims, victim families, right? Anybody and everybody who has a stake in what happened and what is going to happen in that community should have their voice heard. There should be a consensus ultimately as to what to do with this thing. Not everybody's going to be happy about the decision that's made, but so long as everybody feels heard, at least there will be a sense of understanding, and through that, healing can continue.
You're listening to the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Dr. John Delatorre, thank you for your insight on that. A difficult one for a community to grapple with. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any of our discussions on the cases that we're following for you right here. You can follow me on Twitter @TonyBPod. My name's Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.